my name is Marie, and I'm having a conversation with Calvin Momolu. He's a physician assistant in Liberia. Hello, Calvin. How are you?
Hello. I'm okay.
Calvin, thank you for taking some time to talk to me. I know you're very busy. So, Calvin, I understand you're a PA in Liberia, and you've been so for about 12 years, and you spent 8 years teaching. Can you tell me a little bit about your experience as a PA in Liberia?
Well, as a PA working in Liberia, it's kind of tough. Because the program was intended to train us physician assistants to work in places where the doctors normally would not go, to my clinics. And then upon the graduation, we signed a contract to work with the Liberian government. Initially, it was good. The commitment on the side of the party was good. But with time, we see a lot of difficulties working as physician assistant. You don't have supplies, drugs, medical equipment, and the worst of all, your salary is so minimal. I find it difficult to survive. And then when you leave, maybe your era of resident and take an assignment in the leeward counties, you now create two homes that you have to feed. And then with the salary, you make it so difficult to sustain yourself. As a result, many of us physician assistants in Liberia, we are very poor. Can we afford to pay our own house? That we keep personal and due for 12 years in the clinic, in different localities in Liberia. People going on the teaching. So, yes, it's quite challenging and it's very difficult to work physician assistant in Liberia because of the salary we get, because of. So there is not much interest, no career ladder, no career development, nothing. Yeah. So those are some of the challenges.
So do Liberians have to work publicly? Can they open their own private clinic since there's a problem getting paid by the government? Is this an option for Liberian PAs?
Right now, a lot of our colleagues who one way or another was able to secure a loan or maybe from a family background they can get money, yes. You open your own private clinic. You see a lot of them go into private clinic. Open your private clinic, sit there, monitor it, and you live a cool life. Yes. The law provides for that.
So PAs can open their own clinics?
The only requirement, you have to have a medical doctor who will serve as coverage doctor for you, who don't necessarily have to come to sit in your clinic 24 hours a day, or who don't necessarily have to come there, but he uses me and they sign your document, you open your clinic.
So it's difficult to open a private clinic. You need a doctor to cover you, is that correct?
Yes, you need a doctor to cover you. So to say difficult, because you know, remember you always have friends. So you try as much as possible to get one friend, a doctor, would be willing to do that for you. So a lot of PAs in this country have a private clinic.
Can Liberians afford to go to the private clinic? Is the amount that you charge something that Liberians can pay for?
Yeah. Jobs, business in our country is one business that is difficult to, you know, break down they can afford. You always have customer to the point that you are able to continue to run your business. Yeah, except in some community, it's not so difficult, especially in the interior part of the country. Because in the interior, the people there have no income, so they will prefer to go to government facilities that are free right now, free of charge. Services that are free right now. But on the other hand, they are constrained to look for money to come to the private clinic because when they go to the government facility, there are no drugs. So private clinic then become useless going somewhere and you can't get drugs. So yes, you can. It's possible you can survive on your clinic and the patient will be all the pain.
One of the things that you had written about is how much work the PAs had done during the Civil War and how it inspired people to become PAs. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of the PA during the Liberian Civil War and how it made the profession really popular? Talk a little bit about that.
During the war, we had the situation of brain drain. Medical doctors, other healthcare professionals left the country. And given our situation upon graduation, we take assignment in rural communities. And normally you don't have money. So we were here in this country providing services because people already knew us. And because we were here, we were the only, qualified healthcare worker next to the doctor that was providing services during the war. And so many young fellows who saw the role we play kind of think it was good for them to become a physician assistant. And let me backtrack a little bit. Before the war, prior to the war, when you graduated as a physician assistant, you are automatically paid some government payroll. You are taking pay, you get assignment, you got housing, facility, you give you motorcycle. And you are paid regularly, which was, good that would sustain you and your family. So when the war came, and given the fact that we were here, did not leave in the large number, we were here providing them. That, in a way, make our profession to be popular, even among NGOs. Some people that came to this country from different parts of the world that don't know about physician assistant, when we started performing and giving our skills that we acquired in training, they got interested in physician assistant and how during the war we became so popular. So even at Span on it, we had the county health, our country is divided into subdivisions. We got 15 counties, and every county have a county health officer who, by our public health law, is supposed to be a medical doctor. But during the civil crisis, when there were no doctors around to perform that duty, they were passed on to the physician assistant. And we did that from a lot of the counties up to the time the war ended, up to the time we had election in this country. It's just, I think, 2 years ago, when we were able to have one or two doctors in all of the counties, even at that, it's still minimal. That one doctor who is playing administrative role, so the next principal clinical supervisor is the physician assistant. And then physician assistant are in the clinics. That, in a way, made the profession popular.
So after that, people started going to PA schools. Could the schools handle the influx of applications? Tell me what the next step was after the war. What happened then?
After the war, in fact, in 2003, when I had the opportunity to serve as minister for the PA school, by then we had only one physician assistant training institution in this country. The influx, massive. Beyond our capacity. Because the infrastructure we have is so limited. And then the influx of candidates wanted to be physician assistants to assume that the top page the facility we had. Every time we give exam, after due tests to qualify for the enter, huge number would be physician assistant candidates. At most, would be able to take 45. And then you have almost pretty close to 1,000 that we would say you cannot find. Because now we got to set the benchmark high so we can be able to recruit the number of students our capacity can permit. So that was happening. As I said in that mail to you, it was just recently one private church, religious organization, came and opened another physician assistant school in Banga, Bong County, one of the sub-regions of our country. And that school only had one graduation. Then the way they do their recruitment, when they recruit a client, they take it from year one to year three because the training length for physician assistant is only 2 years, 6 semesters. So people who want to be PAs who cannot be trained because the facility
So I just want to make sure I understand. So when you talked about the benchmarks, will you just explain that again about the benchmarks?
So maybe entering this year for the school, physician assistant school at the Tubman National Institute of Medical Arts, we got 2,000 candidates. Of the 2,000 candidates, we got 950 that applied and want to be physician assistant. Of the 950 that applied and want to be physician assistant, we got only space for 45.
Okay.
50. So now we say if the passing mark is supposed to have 70 cents to say you pass the aptitude test, we now increase it to 90 so that we can be able to eliminate other people that they will know. With all them knowing that we favor certain groups. So that's what I mean. Normally, passing marks should be for 70 above, but for the purpose of accommodating the large influx of students, and you don't have the capacity, we carry the passing mark up. Sometimes we start as high as 88.
Okay.
That's what I mean. Is that fair?
Yeah, thank you. I understand. So you were saying that PAs used to receive a lot of support before the war, and now they don't. What changed? Did the government lose money? Did they change politically? What happened that made life for PAs so unpleasant?
From the inception of the program, you had UNICEF that was involved. Their involvement was that, look, in Liberia, the year it takes to train a medical doctor, and the number of trained medical doctors and the population is difficult to have medical doctors. So the talk that you bring another program. So given the fact that the graduate physician assistant will be working in a clinic together with the children, UNICEF had program. UNICEF was sponsoring. WHO was sponsoring. The government of Liberia was sponsoring. At the end of day, all the other organizations, we have primary healthcare projects that were projects in the country that are being sponsored by the German government. We had all these supports going to primary healthcare level, healthcare provider, head about the physician assistant. So with all of the resources that were available and the goodwill on the part of government by then, support was adequate. But now, with government being the sole sponsor, being the sole employer of physician assistants, being the sole authority having the means to get physician assistant award, it now becomes difficult, especially when you get some government. If you're the authority are not interested, the physician assistant welfare is going to play down your importance. So support to the programs that are diminishing, and graduates are now, right now, have to find their own job. So, yes, that's some of the reasons. for the downward trend we are taking, as we teach and as we train in our country.
Do you think it's a, does the Liberian government appreciate what PAs do? It sounds like you do an awful lot. Is it just a matter of money or that they just don't appreciate what you're doing?
Well, if you listen to the politicians speak, they do appreciate it. Because PAs, they want the voters to vote for them. They will talk about providing quality health care to them. They use it, they say, look, we think you are suffering, you need to have access to quality health care, and we are in a position to provide for you. We'll provide it for you. So they do understand the critical role we play. They appreciate it when they are done. But when they go to make policy, they tend to look at their own interests, forgetting about the interests of those on whose behalf they were able to get the people convinced to vote for them. It's not that they don't appreciate the local, the very recipient, those who are beneficiary services providers, appreciate it. They appreciate it. You don't understand our government or the bigger government, so they will not appreciate it because at the level they reach in society, in our society, they can no longer speak healthcare services or medical services in Liberia, they're seeking outside. They're services outside. So they don't, they don't put in as much fund as possible to provide funding to the paramedics.
So I'm sorry, they appreciate you, but they're having trouble supplying you with the benefits that you had in the past. Is that right?
Right. They appreciate it. Even at the Ministry of Health level, they appreciate the role physician assistant play in the healthcare delivery system of this country. They appreciate it. They know the role we play. They know our importance. But support is not forthcoming. That's just it.
And you were also telling me that PAs are leaving the profession and going on to get further degrees. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Because PAs. Right now, we've got 3 years program, 6 semesters running. You graduate with a diploma. That is the level you start. No, you can't go forward. If you want to earn a bachelor's degree, you have to enroll in one of the universities in this country, pick up another course. For me to have been qualified to go back to serve as director for the physician assistant program, I have to get enrolled at the University of Liberia. Enrolling the Black College on a degree in sociology and demographics, and went back. Because then they want a bachelor's degree or a master's degree to head the program. But the program itself is just limited to you having a diploma, which makes it difficult. Even right now, when we send our CV or we send our credential, academic credential, I think it's difficult for any university to value and say this SYC credit or being accumulated by the student, and we can start at this level. So, yes, that's pretty difficult. So, you see a lot of us who want to excel in society will have to leave, become a physician assistant. So you see, from 1965 up to present, we just one Cali University, Mother Patin, just recruited the first batch of graduate physician assistants that will do college required courses and offer bachelor degree as physician assistant. Just started. The other universities started, Cardinal University, they have not even gone anywhere. I think 2 semesters they are gone. It's not even working well. So if you want to have a degree, you will have to branch, you have to leave your profession and go into another area.
Repeat that again. So you're saying that there is a Bachelor's of Science degree for PAs, but you're losing them. Can you explain that?
These are physician assistants that graduated, have worked 3 years in our recruitment on a special program to go and do some other college required courses in addition to their qualification as physician assistants they will spend 4 semesters in addition to the 6 semesters they already spent to become physician assistant. Then they can now graduate and they give you a bachelor degree as a physician assistant.
And what happened to these students? Did they go, you were saying that things didn't go well for them.
Well, they got to pay their own school fees because that's a private place. They got to pay school fees because that's a private place. And we have to look for a scholarship as an association. They have not graduated yet, so we don't know whether or not they will be paid based on their qualification and pay. So another thing that we are faced with, no, you enter, your entry salary is the one that remains with you until your retirement.
Okay, so you get paid the same amount for your entire life. That's a problem.
That's a problem. You get paid the same amount. If I graduate this year, I join someone that's been working for the next 10 years, we made the same amount of money.
What I wanted to ask you as well is Ebola. Tell me a little bit about the effect of Ebola on Liberia and what physician assistants are doing, what their involvement is.
Ebola on Liberia. Initially, when there was this outbreak in one of our remote counties, in a specific district, people volunteered to go there. Government promised to be physician assistant and went out of there and went there. At the end of the service, money was not forthcoming. People that should have been isolated, they were isolated, no food provided for them, they got to leave the isolation camp. As a result, we now see it spreading around. And the physician assistants, given the fact that they work at the clinic, they are the frontliner, they are the verified contact people that do assessment, thorough assessment, and that knows patient conditions. When they do that, some of them have contacted the illness. Some of them, as right now, as we speak, we have 2 physician assistants who are sick with Ebola.
Oh, dear.
And are unable to speak. And we have had 10 health workers that have died so far from the disease, including 1 medical doctor, 3 nurses, and the rest are nurses. And in fact, the medical doctor that died, he's not a Liberian. He came in his country to help us provide healthcare services. He was a very good surgeon. But when the nurse that died at one of our local hospitals was infected with the virus, not knowing initially it was the virus, they provided care for that man. Isn't that how the 2 physician assistants contacted Ebola? Because they were caring for a nurse, a colleague of them that I got sick, not knowing it was Ebola, until when they started manifesting the signs and symptoms, and the tests were done and confirmed, I wish it was too late, they had enough contact with the patient. So that's how they got contacted. They have now undergone treatment. There are some who came in contact with Ebola patients, some physician assistants, but right now they are not presented with any signs and symptoms of illness. But we're kind of keeping a close watch on them, not in isolation centers, keeping track record of them and trying to ensure that their contacts are also traced so we can bring it under control. But Ebola in our country is spreading rapidly because a lot of our population don't understand the simple techniques of washing hands. And some don't believe the sickness is real in our country. It is our responsibility as health workers to let them know, but yet they still pay heed to it. Even our national government, through the Minister of Health of this country, had a lot of jingles on the radio, little talk shows. But again, the risk posed to physician assistants also stems from the fact that they do not have the protective equipment, the personal protective equipment that the government should make available to health workers who are at the front line catering the patients whose status they do not know initially whether or not it's Ebola. Because it presents with the signs and symptoms as malaria that we got endemic in our country. So you wouldn't know which is which. And if you don't have no protective equipment to come in contact, you can easily come down with a condition.
You're not receiving outside aid to help with the protective equipment?
It's hard for me to verify that because myself, I'm not in clinical practice right now. But from all of the indication, physician assistant I talk to, clinics I go to, I don't see personal equipment. My understanding is some, like one of the Sundials in Morovia, is being managed by an NGO. I think the Samaritan Pies is being managed by an NGO, which is so far the best center we have, because the one that is directly managed by the Ministry of Health has a lot of problems, lack of drugs, lack of food for the patient. As I said in my email to you, even those of our physician assistants, in our association, we have to do volunteer contributions to buy drugs, to buy food, and other things to take it to our colleagues at the treatment center.
And do you know how many cases of Ebola you have in the country by any chance?
My understanding it should be around 65. I've not gotten the update from yesterday up to now. Whether they are increased or whether we have new cases, I'll have to find out.
No, that's fine. What's an estimate, if you have an estimate of how many cases there are?
Yeah, I may not be as bad, but I think I'm being in the middle of 60 to 70.
Okay.
I may not be as bad now.
I was reading that in some African countries with Ebola, the reason it spreads is because people feel like they need to care for their sick and they spread the disease. Is that an issue in Liberia?
It is. It is. It is a critical issue. Because when you got your child or relative, your husband, your wife, your son or daughter who is sick, with no mother will start to care for them. We normally start to provide care for them. And sometimes we wait for some days and we feel in our home management and we take them to the hospital. So that is a very serious problem. Most time people are arriving at the health facility very late. You know, not only with Ebola, even with many other conditions in our country. Because people try to see. People don't understand. When people take over the countless drugs. Because you have symptoms similar to the one I have, you went to the hospital, they gave you the medicine, you took it 2 days, you feel better, you stop taking the drugs. Then I come to you, or I am your relative. I say, look, I'm sick, I have these signs and symptoms. You say, oh, yeah, I've had similar feeling the last time. And then when I went to the hospital, the drugs they gave me, I still got some. They will come and start to give it to you. You will do that for some days until it gets worse than the county hospital. Yeah, it is an issue.
So they're coming in too late. That's one of the issues, right, with Ebola?
Yeah. They're coming too late. They're coming with almost all of the practical signs and symptoms. And, you know, the earlier the diagnosis, the better the prognosis. So the late the diagnosis, you know, the worse the prognosis. So that is an issue. And let me tell you, let me be frank to you to tell you another thing. When people are sick in our country and don't go to the hospital immediately, they will go to some of the churches who are in the business of healing, to taking sick people there, to getting healed through prayer, through all kinds of other rituals that they perform. So the people go to the prayer places instead of then going to hospital. They go to other traditional healers. And those are all issues with our system.
So there's still a lot of Liberians that go to traditional healers and go to prayer for their for cures. Is that correct?
Yes.
I know patients come to the clinic when they're very, very sick, but is there some degree of trust in medicine, or is it they don't trust it, or do they trust traditional healers more? Talk a little bit about that.
No, they got trust in the clinic. They tell they're arriving late after the trial on their own. It's hard to balance it, but yeah, there are a lot of going to prayer people, a lot going to the hospital, and other going to traditional healers.
And tell me the praying away your disease, that seems to be becoming an issue in a lot of parts of Africa. Tell me a little bit about how long people have been going to churches and praying away their disease. Is that become a new issue or is that an old issue? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, in some parts, people are not really going to churches. But with the influx of new kind of belief, other churches are getting people to go there. You will not believe people will go on the radio and advertise that they can heal all other sicknesses. Whether or not it's curable, they say we can cure it. Take for instance diabetes. They say we can cure it. Take for instance hypertension. They say we can cure it. So do you want to go to a hospital that will put you on drugs that you have to be taking for your diabetic condition or your hypertensive condition? And the doctor tells you, you have to control the thing with constantly take your drug. Then you go to offer your prayer and give you what we call holy bath, give you oil and other stuff, and see your condition is totally healed. You are free. So people chose to go to them. It has become an issue of late. In time past, no, it was not much. They were not on the increase as it is. Because people was honest. But there are a lot of people who are not honest, who profess to be pastors, and who say they are healing, they are healers, they got the power, some supernatural power upon them, that when they pray for you, you can get well. And people tend to believe and go to them. Yeah, that is becoming an issue in our country, especially with our healthcare delivery system.
Oh, you're saying that because people can't get into clinics, going to a church is actually it's preferred because it's easier to go to a church than it is to a clinic.
Yeah, so they go to the clinic. I mean, they go to the church because they are thinking it all they believe or what they have been told by this pastor is that they can get cured from the sickness and they will never get sick. So they go to try at a point that they know that, look, this thing here is not working, let me go to the hospital. Sometimes it's late.
It sounds like you have lots of challenges in Liberia.
It is, yeah, we have a lot of challenges that we need to work on.
One of the things that all the African mid-levels I've talked to is about career advancement. Can you... it seems to be a universal theme that many clinicians all over Africa want career advancement. So if I understand it correctly, without a bachelor's of science degree, you can't go on and do other courses. Is that it? Or is there more to the... Tell me a little bit more about the career development, the career ladder, and what you want to advance your career. What do you think the country needs to help your profession become happier?
Well, career development for us is not only going to get the bachelor's degree, but for instance, you do not provide a substantive say in ophthalmology, say in pediatric medicine, say in tropical and communicable diseases. Provide some specialty so people can get specialized in those kind of areas at their level as a nurse, as a physician assistant. But nothing like that. You graduate as a general practitioner, you are that general practitioner until otherwise. So those are the issues we really have. In other countries, few countries in East Africa, I see the kind of tax shifting. Say you don't have much doctor, you can train this clinician, give them skills, they can do kind of rapid. In remote places, they can do, you know, because like for us, we got a high maternal mortality rate. You can train people that can provide obstetric and gynecological care. That's in a way a specialty, and you pay them at cost.
Say that one more time. You what?
I said you can provide a specialty, and then they got a qualification, and you pay them. I charge you pay them for being a physician assistant who is a little bit specialized in a specific area. You get them paid for that, but it's not the case. You're not providing any sub specialization. You are not also providing incentive for them in that direction. So those are the issues we got. Like in the United States, I know you can have a physician assistant who is who got maybe a master's degree or who is a pediatrician. I know that that's subspecialty for physician assistant, but we don't have.
So you can't practice in a subspecialty, or can you practice it without a Because we just go into the specialty. We don't get a special degree, but we can specialize. And in Kenya, you can get a special degree to specialize. So what would be preferable for you, just having the chance to specialize or having the special degree to specialize? What would your profession think is the best?
Yeah, whichever is available to us would make use of it. But our first thing is there has to be the opportunity for one, for either of them. But that opportunity is not there. So if we will choose, yes, that we want the opportunity to specialize, a sub-specialty.
So right now you do mostly primary care in rural areas, and you're not allowed or trained to do specialty work, right?
No, they do general.
Somebody I was talking to was telling me that you're trained to do C-sections, but that you're not allowed to do them. And they wanted PAs to know how to do C-sections for care in rural, isolated areas. Can you tell me a little bit about that, if you know anything about it?
No, in Liberia, no. In Liberia, no physician has been trained to do C-section section. When we did the curriculum in 2010, it was our thinking that there was going to be tax shifting associated with cesarean section, that the PA was going to be given the skills and trained to do that. But they are not trained any physician assistant to perform cesarean section in this country.
Were they thinking of doing this?
Well, they're supposed to be thinking, because when we did a curriculum and made a presentation to the ministry, that was one of the concerns we raised. And they said they were going to address it. But when they started the training just recently, they are training other cultural workers, not physician assistants. Our thinking was they were going to give us the opportunity to have staff to have skills in cesarean section, that they have not done that. When they started the program, my understanding is they recruited other health workers instead of an assistant. And do her work, I don't know. I'm not sure whether or not I'm training is ongoing.
Okay, do they train midwives to do this?
We were thinking of that because I remember I saw some contract that they were contemplating to train midwives in medical. But I'm not sure if that program has started, but it should be that. I need to check that out. If any other information about, I'll provide it to you. But
okay.
There should be something going on.
All right. And Kenneth, if you have one message for the world that you want us to know about Liberian PAs, what would it be?
That one message would be to provide them the opportunity to develop, to be developed within their own profession. So that given their profession, they be given the incentives and salary that will make them keep them in their profession, instead of leaving their profession to go to other places or other profession for greener pasture.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all your time.
Thank you, Mary. I'm always available whenever you want information. If I get all of it, to you.